The reading today is from the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 2. And in your pew Bibles, it's on page 587. Ecclesiastes, chapter 2, starting to read at verse 1 through to verse 11. I said to myself, "Come now, I will make a test of pleasure. Enjoy yourself." But behold, this also was vanity. I said of laughter, "It is mad." And of pleasure, "What use is it?" I searched with my mind how to cheer my body with wine, my mind still guiding me with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was good for the sons of men to do under heaven during the few days of their life. I made great works. I built houses and planted vineyards for myself. I made myself gardens and parks and planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made myself pools from which to water the forest of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had slaves who were born in my house. I had also great possessions of herds and flocks, more than any who had been before me in Jerusalem. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings and provinces. I got singers, both men and women, and many concubines, man's delight. So I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me. And whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure in all my toil. And this was my reward for all my toil. Then I considered all that my hands had done, and the toil I had spent in doing it. And behold, all was vanity and a striving after wind, and there was nothing to be gained under the sun. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. Well, now, if you'd come back to the book of Ecclesiastes, to page 587, if you've got a pew Bible, it'll be a big help having it in front of you. Come and meet the person who's going to be our teacher for the next 3 weeks. If you look at the very beginning of his book and the first verse, you'll see he likes to be known as Mr. Preacher. He taught thousands of years ago, but don't worry, he's so old-fashioned that he's up to date again now. He coined the phrase, "There's nothing new under the sun," so he ought to know. He has a refreshing style. In spite of his age, he's not one of those men who view life in the foggy nostalgia of all our yesterdays. "Never ask," he wrote, "never ask, oh, why were things so much better in the old days? It's not an intelligent question." Retired colonels take note. He's not someone who teaches from an ivory tower or with rose-tinted spectacles on, which is a good thing, because his subject matter is life. I think we'll discover that no one could be more down to earth than him. And in his exam paper, there will be one compulsory question, which whatever else you like to put down, you have to answer before you go any further. Indeed, he's not going to give us the answer to life until we've explored this question thoroughly. So let's face it right at the beginning of our time with him. His crucial question. It's there in verse 3 of chapter 1. It's the question he's going to hammer away at time and time again. And it goes like this: "What does man gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun?" What does man gain? What do you get out of it? All that you're doing, what does it come to? The word "gain" is a commercial term. Basically, it just means profit. It's a question you no doubt ask yourself every day in your office. And if you don't ask it, the manager no doubt asks it of you. Before you go any further with this matter, before you waste any more of your time and the company's money, tell us, what's the profit? What's in it for us? Well, says Mr. Preacher, isn't it time we ask that question of life? What's in it? What's the gain? What's the meaning? What's the point? When all is said and done about your life, what's left? Now, he knows how easily we avoid the question. He wants to make me think. One of his ways of doing it is by telling me the answer before he even asks the question. And he gives the answer in verse 2. Vanity of vanities. Vanity of vanities, he says, in case we didn't hear him the first time. It's empty. It's fleeting. Passes so quickly, life, doesn't it? So many things that don't add up, it's senseless. And he's not talking about just a bit of it. A charming little diversion, you know, what we do on Thursday night, a harmless sideline. No, the sum of it all is vanity. That's his verdict, he says, if you look at life under the sun. That's the way he's speaking. It's a peculiar phrase of his. It means, he says, if we view the world from where we stand, if we want to look at life and try and make sense of it as we experience it, if we don't start bringing God into it, he's happy for us not to bring God into it for the moment. He says, that's fine. You don't believe in God, right? But just face up to what you've got of life. If this is all there is, are you willing to live with your beliefs? Because he says, I'll tell you where they'll lead you to. They'll lead you, if you really explore them, to concluding that life is a waste. Well, that's provocative. That ought to make someone want to fight back. And he'll say, fight your corner by all means, as long as you face this question. And you won't be able to fob him off. It's no good saying, well, I'm very happy as I am. That's not the point. What do you gain? What's the meaning of it all? It's no good saying to him, well, you know, I'm perfectly busy as I am. No, that's not the point. Anyone can be busy. It's not very hard, is it? What do you get out of it all? He knows we have to work. He's no time for idle people. When a man's too lazy to repair his roof, he wrote, it'll leak. I mean, he's practical, he's realistic. It's not abstract philosophy, this, what is the meaning of life in metaphysical terms. No, he understands the rat race. Listen to him. Again, I saw something useless under the sun. A person who has no one, either son or brother, yet there's no end to all his toil, and his eyes are never satisfied with riches, so that he never asks, for whom am I toiling and depriving myself of pleasure? He understands life after the Big Bang. You know, there's no end to all his toil. He's in the office at 7:30. His briefcase is always bulging when he goes home with work he's going to do there. There's no end to the work. He's not satisfied with the riches. It's golden hallows and golden handshakes all the time. And he's so busy, he never asks the question. He won't let me get away with that. We'll not come these 3 weeks without facing this question. It's his crucial question. What do you gain? What do you gain from all the toil with which you toil under the sun? A crucial question. But the avenue he's going to explore this lunchtime makes, at least on the surface, more pleasant reading. Here's a pleasant test that he's set himself. Come to chapter 2, to the verses Chris has read to us, and let's examine it. I said to myself, come now, I'll make a test of pleasure, enjoy yourself. It's the kind of exam we'd all like to take, isn't it? You see, he threw himself into the social whirl. Like every good yuppie, he not only worked hard, but played hard. His diary wasn't only full of business meetings, but social engagements. Philofax bulging with addresses of clubs and contacts and phone numbers of friends, the credit card holder stretched to bursting, there will be no expenses spared on this test. But behold, this also was vanity. I said of laughter, it's mad. And of pleasure, what use is it? He's got little nuances in that verse that's worth exploring. When he speaks of laughter, he's meaning frivolity. That kind of light fun, that fun of a game or a party. Oh, it's the office joker, you know, he's always got the little quip and the jest. Good for a wheeze, the life and soul of any party, and then we discover that that's all he is. And his verdict? Mad. And not medically, but in the sense that he's lost his judgment. Rather than face life as it is, he'll drown it in a sea of frivolity. Do you know the type? Pleasure is rather more upmarket. Highbrow, sophisticated. I don't know, here's the opera buff or the ballet fiend, the concert goer. Now, he's not against fun and joy and pleasure. The book is riddled with it. It's just that he knows it's not life. It's not the key to it. And his question for pleasure is this: what use is it? What's it changed? Where has it got us? And as he goes into the details of his search, we'll discover it's this strange mixture of the coarse and sensuous on the one hand and the subtle and sophisticated on the other. He tries wine. Yes, he'd be in the wine bars at lunchtime. He'd be with that growing group who drink the evening away after work. He's got a creative side, though. Look at verse 4. Clean, that environmental group that were criticizing the city corporation yesterday, they, I think, would warm to this man. I made great works, I built houses and planted vineyards for myself. Gardens and parks, that's what they wanted. All kinds of fruit trees. Pools from which to water the forest of growing trees. Puts the ground floor of Standard Chartered Bank into the shade, doesn't it? And of course, with what he has at his disposal, we'll find it hard to outdo him as a playboy. He'd got slaves of all kinds. He had great possessions of herds and flocks. He was writing before the days of plastic money. He had silver and gold and treasure. Oh yes, it may not be the sort of wealth we have now, but he understands it and he knows its problems. He knows that wealth isn't automatically life. The richer you are, he wrote, the more mouths you have to feed. All you gain is the knowledge that you're rich. Now, there's truth, isn't there? You see, riches bring problems. Your salary goes up, and your mortgage goes up because you bought a bigger house. And now you've got to pay an accountant, because if you don't pay him, the tax man will get even more than what he's getting at the moment. And that's not to mention the burglar who's eyeing your property, the employees you have to pay to run your business. Everyone wants a cut. Oh, a working man may or may not have enough to eat, but at least he can get a good night's sleep, Mr. Preacher says. A rich man, however, has so much that he stays awake worrying. And back he comes. The end of verse 8, you see, he'd had the wine, now comes the song, and the women, concubines. All the women a man could want, one translation puts it. So, I became great. I surpassed all who were before me. Whatever my eyes desired, I didn't keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure. You name it, he did it. For my heart found pleasure in all my toil, and this was my reward for all my toil. I hope you're beginning to see, Mr. Preacher isn't one of those people of whom you'd say he doesn't know how to enjoy himself. Life and vitality are throbbing through him. He's not one of those preachers who issue a tirade against sins of the flesh and you wonder if they'd ever know one if they met one. Oh, he knows them all right. He loved this test. He warmed to it. He thrilled to the conquest. But his wisdom remained with him. Pleasant though the test was, he couldn't get away from his own crucial question. So he had to face up to the post-mortem. That's what verse 11 is, isn't it? The post-mortem. I considered all that my hands had done and the toil I'd spent in doing it. Yet he was wise enough to have the guts to consider, to look life in the eye and face the facts, not to be content to just to put a brave face on it, to ask the question, well, I've done all of that, I've loved it all, what's the profit? And behold, all was vanity. It was empty. He knew what it was to pander to the senses again and again and again and still find they weren't satisfied. To give them just the thing they asked for. And then they want more. It was fleeting. The moments of triumph are all too brief. The years go by too quickly. Creative powers dry up. And when it's not just the wallet but the body that's bulging, then conquests are harder to come by. All was vanity and a striving after wind. How elusive. You see, his joy was in his toil. The fun was in the chase. He loved making the conquest, but when he'd made it... The thing about pleasure, isn't it? Chase pleasure, and you lose it. It's like grabbing a handful of sand, run through the fingers. There was nothing to be gained under the sun. What's the profit? Mr. Preacher, you see, will happily explore all these avenues, but if you want to make the test, you must face the post-mortem. People have been doing it ever since. Rachel Welch. I'd acquired everything I wanted, yet I was totally miserable. I thought it was very peculiar that I'd acquired everything I'd wanted as a child. Wealth, fame, accomplishment in my career. I had beautiful children. A lifestyle that seemed terrific. Yet I was totally and miserably unhappy. I found it very frightening that one could acquire all these things and still be so miserable. Kept my heart from no pleasure. And behold, all was vanity. A few weeks ago, it was the 10th anniversary of Elvis Presley's death. Extraordinary life that was. Triumph and tragedy side by side, weren't they? Fame, success, women, drugs, death. Read an article by his stepbrother. Remarkably sympathetic, quite moving in many ways, and here was his verdict. Elvis had a lot of money, power, prestige, and everything that goes along with it. Elvis was a victim, just like anyone else could have been. I said to myself, come now, I'll make a test of pleasure. Enjoy yourself. Well, here's another man who could and did. Elvis was a victim, just like anyone else could have been. It's like striving after wind. There was nothing to be gained. Or coming down from those rarefied heights of pop stars and film stars, here's what a young man wrote to me last week. I regret in many ways the lost years of my early youth. Frantically pursuing privilege, wealth, influence, knowledge, whilst all the time neglecting my standing before God. Well, Mr. Preacher's writing to spare us having to write that. See, verse 11 is the morning after the night before, isn't it? Then I considered. The remarkable thing about this man is that when he gets into this world of pleasure, he's still got enough wisdom to stand back and consider. Most of us, when we're in that deep, can never pull out and look and see where we're going and ask the question. He did. He's not racking himself with guilt feelings in this verse. He's not accusing himself of immorality. No, he's willing to take secular man on his own terms and say, right, let's live life your way, but you must face this test. And if you play life with no rules, you'll discover there is one rule. It doesn't work. What does man gain? By all the toiling at pleasure even, at which you toil under the sun. Well, I hope he's not sounding a killjoy. He's not. He wrote, there's nothing better for a man than that he should eat, drink, and enjoy what he's earned. And you say, well, I wish he'd say something positive then. He will. He just doesn't believe in doing it too quickly. You see, if he gives you the answers too fast, they can sound glib, can't they? And I might not really be ready to listen to them. You know the way the church is often accused of answering questions that no one is asking? Well, he's heard of that, and he's not going to fall into the trap. So he'll go on exploring one cul-de-sac after another, until we round on him and say, well, what is the answer? What's the point to life? Where do I get the profit? Now, if you can't wait that long, do ask the person who brought you along this lunchtime. They may already have discovered the answer, and they'll be willing to take you on the shortcut. But Mr. Preacher will put me through all this and more, because he knows it's only when I'll admit I haven't got it that I'll turn to the one who gives it. Hundreds of years later, an even greater preacher came along asking exactly the same question. He said that the way to life wasn't to indulge yourself, but to deny yourself. He said, if you try and save your life, you'll lose it. He said, if you'll lose your life to me, you'll save it. Mr. Preacher said, what does man gain? By all the toil at which he toils under the sun. Where's the profit? It's not in pleasure. You haven't got it if you think it's there. His successor, whom he'd never heard of, Jesus, he said, what does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his life? Let's pray. What does man gain? Apart from God, wrote Mr. Preacher, who can eat, who can have enjoyment? Lord, give us the courage and the honesty to face the facts about life and about ourselves. Give us the humility to turn to you for life, and in your mercy give it to us. For Jesus' sake, Amen.